Sometimes we get like weird notions about what relationships are about. And most of us, if you're like me, I mean, my parents never talked to me about relationships at all. And so I learned through my friends, which weren't very good, very helpful. And also I learned just through movies that I watched, songs that I, that are on the radio or that, that people sing. And so what we're going to do, this is how it's going to work. I'm going to put up some lyrics to some popular songs, okay, that I think you know, okay, because an expert gathered this data for me. All right, so this expert is able to, this expert gave me some songs and that kind of are informative that whether they're intentionally or indirectly, they educate us about relationships. And unfortunately, a lot of us, our paradigm about relationships are formed by these songs, okay? Because we sing them all the time. Some of you are like not going to admit that you sing or that you know, but you know them, okay? So, and if you get it, so what you got to do is first person that can identify the artist and the name of the song, just raise your hand, okay? Civilly. Okay? That means, like, just calmly and don't, like, beat up somebody next to you, okay? In a civil manner, raise your hand, and if you get it right, you get a prize, okay? I know this is Sunday afternoon. Sunday afternoons are tough, and so we're going to give you some candy, some chocolate, okay? I had somebody go to the store and get these. I told them to get big candy bars. So they got Maxes. Okay? There's a lot of candy in there, okay? Are you guys ready for this? All right. Okay. Hold on. Don't put it up yet. Okay. This is going to be this one should be easy. We're going to start on an easy one, okay? Ready? No, I'm just going to say it, okay? I'll do my best to just say it without breaking into song, okay? Okay, ready? Okay. Hey, girl. It's now or never. Don't overthink, just let it go. And if we get together, yeah, get together. Don't let the picture leave your phone. And girl, you and I, we're about to make some memories tonight. You guys know what it is? I guess I'm going to... You have to raise your hand, Irene. Okay. Go ahead. What's the song name too?
I don't know.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, while we're young. Live while we're young. Okay, here you go. Irene was just pretending she didn't know the name of the song. Okay. Good. Okay, you guys get the gist of the game? Because it's a little bit exciting. Okay, next. Oh, by the way, I'll give a little bit of commentary on this song. Okay? Man, I don't think I would want to spend a night with any of these guys. Okay? And I would never want my daughter to hang out with any of these guys at night, all right? Because when they say we're about to make some memories tonight, I mean, realistically, for most people, they're going to be bad memories, okay? I mean, I'm not even kidding. Maybe 5 years from that point, they're going to be like, those are the memories I wish I never had if because of those things that, they convinced me to do that night, okay? One night can change people's histories, right? So, unfortunate. Okay, next one. Tonight, I will love you tonight. Give me everything tonight. I think that's too easy, right? Okay.
Neo, give me everything.
He's one of them. Okay, I'll give you a chance to say who the main artist is. Okay, it's, I will give it to you, okay? It's Pitbull. I actually never heard of him, but the expert said this is a good song. So Pitbull featuring Neo, Afrojack, and Nier. Okay? So, I mean, also this song, just talks about what you're going to do that night and not really the consequences after that night, what's going to happen. And so just trying to, says, I'm going to love you tonight. Just one night he's going to love you, and that's it. That's pretty sad, right? That's an easy commitment. I'll love you one night. That's it. That's ridiculous. Okay. Next. This is like so easy. This is like the easiest one. Robbie, can you help me? Like, make sure you. Okay. Look, turn around and see who's. Okay, ready? It's a beautiful night. We're looking for something dumb to do. Okay. Marry you. Okay. So let me just finish what it says. It's a beautiful night. We're looking for something dumb to do. Hey, baby, I think I want to marry you. If we break up, if we wake up and you want to break up, that's cool. No, I won't blame you. It was fun, girl. Okay. I mean, obviously, when you think about the words of this song, it doesn't really value what marriage is all about, right? And it's something that's on a whim. You do if you feel like it. You go to Las Vegas or something, you get married at the night, and then you cancel it the next morning. And that's what marriage is. That's what people learn about what marriage is. It's something fun, and then you break up after you're done with the fun, okay? And it's also dumb to do, but it's not dumb, okay? Okay, fourth. This is a good one. I like this one, expert. I'm not going to say who it is. I like this song, okay? I mean, I don't like this song. I like what it says. Or I don't like what it says. I like the example. Just whatever. Okay, let's just say it. So what if I go on a million dates? Don't get me wrong. I just need some time to play. All my life, I've been good. But now I'm thinking, what the hell? All I want is to mess around. Oh, sorry. Who was first?
Jesse.
She came back from her practicum. Yes.
What the hell?
Yep. Yes. And I will not tell your dorm parents that you said that. Oh, wait. Sorry, here.
The intro.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay, last one. So, I mean, with this song, it's just talking about somebody who's tired of being like a goody-goody two-shoes, right? And now she wants to go on dates. And go on a million of them and mess around with people. And what's interesting about this is now it's not just the guys who do the playing around with girls, right? Now it's girls who play around with guys, right? Interesting. Okay, last one. I think this is easy too. I picked this. I actually did not listen to the expert on this one. This was my own. Okay. Are you ready? Last one. Let me get this ready. Okay. We jumped, never asking why. We kissed. I fell under your spell. A love no one can deny. Yes. Here you go. Oh, good. I could not find any decent picture of this. If you guys know the music video, you know what I'm talking about. Like, literally impossible, okay? You know, my heart for this, for you, is actually kind of a parental heart. And what I mean by that is growing up for myself, like I mentioned, I didn't really have much of an idea of relationships, okay? I mean, I was pretty bad about relationships. I never had a girlfriend. You know, I was very fortunate to get married because I never had a girlfriend. You know, I never talked to my parents about it. And, you know, my parents had a pretty good relationship, pretty good marriage. They've been married now for probably over 40 years. And I'm really blessed by that. You know, I'm blessed to see and have a model in my home of two people who have been committed to each other. I don't think they have a perfect marriage, and nor do they necessarily follow, like, a lot of biblical principles and where they're so Christ-centered and super spiritual. My parents really were not like that. But when I look at our generation here, the generation that's growing up, you know, and you're going through into your 20-somethings, I'm always very concerned because of things like many of us come from broken families, and many of us come from families where we haven't really seen much of an example of a godly marriage and godly relationships. And so not only that, but there are things that are out in the world today that I didn't have growing up, okay? Back when I was young, you know, when the internet came was when I was in college, right? And not even until like after I was in graduate school and after graduate school, I had my first cell phone, right? And now there's so many things that you can do with a cell phone, with a smartphone, so many ways that you can meet people and get attached to a guy or to a girl. And, you know, not only that, but most of us are going to get educated about relationships, you know, through songs like this. And, you know, part of it is, you know, we're having fun. But also the reality is most of us don't have any guidance about relationships. So the only place we're going to get guidance about relationships are through the love experts like One Direction and Miley Cyrus, which are, you know, they're human beings. They have flaws and Jesus loves them. But I would not want to get relationship advice. I would not want them to be giving relationship advice to my children. And when I think about for this generation, I know that a lot of us, we want relationships. That's perfectly fine. It's a normal desire to have relationships. Some of us have already had boyfriends or girlfriends, and, you know, we might be in a relationship with someone right now. And, you know, I don't want you to feel like you're judged because some of your practices are different than what I say. But what I will say is this is, please be open to having your paradigms challenged. Be open and be humble to be thinking that maybe this pastor can offer some biblical wisdom about relationships so that you don't make some painful mistakes and so that you don't make some decisions that you regret. That's my heart for you, okay? And like I said in Sunday celebration, I want us to have a reformation of our way of thinking. And part of that is seminars like this so that I can have the opportunity with you to have a better way of approaching relationships, okay? Over the course of the next two Sundays, so today and next week, I'm going to go through just four principles about relationships, okay? So we'll cover two today, and then we'll take a little break. You can digest it. You can ask your life group leaders. You can have questions. You can ask me. And then next week, we'll go through two more, okay? Under these four principles, there's a lot of other thoughts and ideas that I'll share as well. And I really hope that these are things that you take to heart. And like I said, parentally, as a parent's heart and as a pastor's heart, that you really think through this before you make, you know, relationship is the second most important decision that you make after you decide to follow Jesus Christ. It can impact you tremendously. And so I hope that you take this seriously and you weigh what I say, what I share. There's going to be a frequently asked questions section, so after my first two points today, you can ask questions. You can actually send questions throughout. Is there the numbers over there? I won't tell you whose number that is. I mean, obviously, it's somebody's number among the coordinators, okay? But that person probably already knows you anyways. And it's more so that you can send a SMS and so that everybody doesn't have to know. I know that people are probably more comfortable sending an SMS to that person rather than, you know, standing up and saying, you know, I have a friend who asked this question, and I thought it was a really good question to ask. So, okay, so none of that silliness. We'll just, you know, allow you to SMS questions to this person, and then she'll kind of just work through, like, process the questions. If there's repeats, she'll kind of process through them, and then we'll kind of field some questions at the end, okay? Okay, here's principle one. Principle one is relationships should have the end goal of marriage. Relationships between a guy and a girl should have the end goal of marriage. Marriage, when you look in the Bible, really is a glorious, awesome institution, okay? I mean, marriage is one of those things where it's great. It's a great thing. It's a great gift of God. It is an awesome thing in the world. It really is, okay? Ephesians 5, 25 through 27 says this, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she may be holy and without blemish." Two things that marriage illustrates theologically are this. First, marriage illustrates Jesus Christ's relationship with the church. Marriage illustrates Jesus Christ's relationship with the church. That's what Ephesians 5 talks about, is really the relationship between a husband and wife is a reflection of a greater relationship that Jesus Christ has with those that he fought for, that he died for, that he won over, and that he is committed to for eternity, right? Isn't that amazing when you think about that? It's not the other way around, okay? It's not that Jesus Christ and the church represents the relationship between husband and wife. No. Jesus, our God, has provided the institution of marriage to be a powerful witness of Jesus Christ's love for his people, right? Therefore, a good marriage, one with Christ in the center, is a powerful witness to people, okay? And when my wife and I got married, that's what we prayed would happen. That's what would happen in our family. There are some of our family members who are not believers. And, you know, we do our best to be good witnesses and to be good models of following Christ. But really, one of the best things that we could do is just have a great marriage where we exemplify sacrifice and submission to one another and loving one another and building up one another, because that really exemplifies Jesus' relationship with the church. When you think about any good, okay, there's a lot of bad romantic comedies, right? Rom-coms. There's a lot of bad ones. I mean, I don't watch most of them because they're all pretty bad. But for those that are quality, okay, there's one that's a quality. Do you guys ever heard? Have you ever heard of the movie 50 First Dates? It's a little bit of an older movie. But for those of you who don't know, or you watched it long time ago, like when you were 1 year old, let me give you a little recap of the story. In 50 First Dates, the character Adam Sandler falls in love with the Drew Barrymore character, okay? The problem is they meet, one day they meet, and he hits it. He thinks that he kind of, like, got her attention, right? And so the next day, he comes by again to see her, and she acts like she doesn't know him, like she's never met him before. He's like, "What is going on here? Why are you acting this way?" But what he ends up finding out is that Drew Barrymore has amnesia, okay? So she can't remember anything that happened the day before or anything after that, okay? Or anything before that. And so every day she meets Adam Sandler, she can't remember him. So that day she might have fallen in love with Adam Sandler. The next day, she doesn't know who he is, okay? And so the winning part of this story, okay, the winning part of this movie is that Adam Sandler decides that every day he's gonna win her over, right? Every day he's gonna think of something new to win her heart. I actually think that's a great example of Jesus' way that he loves his church, right? Every day, what happens? We forget about Christ's love, right? Every day. And we're so fickle. We change our minds and we change our feelings all the time. But Jesus Christ pursues us even when we wander away, right? Even when we have all these other loves, Jesus Christ still pursues us. And so I think there's some redeeming quality to some media. I'm not bashing all movies and all all music. There are some like this example that really illustrates the power of what marriage symbolizes, Christ pursuing his bride. Also, marriage illustrates the oneness of God the Father, God the Son, and God the Spirit. Okay, so you guys got to think really deeply. I know you weren't prepared to think so theologically about things, but think about the Trinity, okay? The Trinity of God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit, is they live in perfect community with each other, okay? So doing the math, according to the Trinity, according to the oneness, is 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 1, right? That's the mystery of the Trinity. The mystery of the Trinity is that you have three persons, three divine persons, but they're one. They're one in intention. They're one in intimacy. They're one in identity, okay? Now, when you think about marriage, the mystery of marriage is that 1 plus 1 equals 1, right? I know in Indonesia, a lot of times people say, you know, there's a lot of family conflict because people, you know, your parents will tell you this, you know, maybe they told you this already. No matter who you marry, we are your blood, right? So you always have to be more loyal to your family because we're blood, right? I've heard of some families say that. But when you think biblically, the union between husband and wife, and part of that is a sexual union, which we'll talk about later, that oneness between a husband and wife is stronger than a bond blood between parent and child. That's how strong that bond is, okay? That's why something like sex should not be done casually, because in the New Testament, when Paul writes to the Corinthians, he says, don't you know that when you have sexual intercourse with a prostitute, you become one with that prostitute, okay? And that should not happen except in the relationship with your spouse, because that relationship with your husband or with your wife is what makes you one. It's a oneness of intimacy and a oneness of identity, oneness of intention that's there that illustrates the community that God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit have. That's pretty heavy, right? When you think about it. The reason why I'm spending time talking about this is I want us to have a high view of marriage, okay? I want us to have a high understanding. Wow, marriage is not like just, you know, hey, I have nothing to do. Let's do something dumb. Let's get married, and if tomorrow you change your mind, that's okay, blah, blah, blah. Ding, 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 right? That's not what marriage is, okay? Marriage is something so much more glorious. And so when we talk about relationships, we have to talk about it in the backdrop of marriage. Because if that's our goal, we're not going to settle for anything less than that, right? We're not going to mess around with other stuff. That's really my thinking here. So we're not going to mess around with just casual dating, whatnot, okay? Because the end goal is this glorious marriage. And I'll be honest with you. Most of us probably have not been raised in families where this marriage is kind of exemplified, okay? It's not just all romantic. It's not all smoky and roses and that's it. Marriage is really hard, okay? But I'll tell you, there's something awesome about marriage where Christ is in the center. It really is, okay? When I talk to the single adults, I'm going to tell them that marriage is not that great, okay? I'm going to give them a balance because a lot of times people say marriage is if you say marriage is awesome, you have to get married, then what about people who are not married? Are they living second-tier lives? No, okay? So we have to have a balance, but marriage really does have these powerful illustrations, okay? It encompasses these powerful illustrations. All right. When entering into a relationship, therefore, marriage should be a visible target. Okay? When entering into a relationship, marriage should be a visible target. I'll be really blunt with you, okay? If it is not something that two parties are ready for, then don't pursue it. If it is not something that the guy and the girl are not ready for. And, you know, a lot of times I'll talk to students and they'll be like, I'm interested in this guy or girl, and I'll ask them, so do you think you're ready? When do you think you're going to get married? And they'll laugh at me, right? Because that's a normal response. Ha, 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 like, Pastor, are you crazy? I have to finish school. I'm only 20 years old. I'm not going to get married until I'm like 35 anyways. And so I'm thinking in my brain, well, if you guys are not ready for marriage, because you don't even know how to make your own bed, you don't know how to like study and those kinds of things, how are you going to be able to take care of another person like Jesus Christ takes care of the church? Right? There's a big discrepancy, big gap there. I think, therefore, we can't handle relationships so carelessly. We really can't. I think a lot of times people say that they want to have just a casual relationship, casual dating relationship. But in my mind, that's kind of an oxymoron, right? That means it's a contradiction in terms. You can't be casual and dating, because by very nature, when you have an exclusive relationship with somebody else, there's something that has heightened, the stakes have heightened in that relationship. It's no longer a casual relationship. Does that make sense? So no matter how casual it is, it's still a little bit more than just a normal acquaintance or a normal interaction with a guy or with a girl. We can't handle relationships so carelessly. It is an awesome responsibility. It is an awesome responsibility. A lot of times people will say, well, don't relationships just happen? Like, it just happens, right? Like, you're starting to, you know, hang out with that person. This happens a lot in university, right? Like, you study in groups, and you hang out, and then you eat together, and you hang out more, and then you end up talking real late, and, you know, first it's just goofing around, and then as it gets later at night, you know, you start talking about more serious things, and then it just happens that way, right? And sometimes people actually put a lot of value in the spontaneity of a relationship. And they think that somehow that actually adds some legitimacy. Okay? Now, for those of you guys who have been on missions before, you have heard this before. Okay? But I'll tell you this again. On a missions team, what I always tell our missions team is this, you know, we're not allowed to have relationships on missions projects. Because when you're together with somebody for like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, you know, if you're in Papua or we go to Southeast Sulawesi or Lampung or something, and you're with each other all the time, and that guy might be the ugliest guy ever, okay? But, like, because you're hanging out with them all the time, and, like, you know, that person maybe, you know, sings real loud, or, you know, they're so good at doing the puppets or something, right? Like, they start transforming, like, hey, that person's not that bad looking. Hey, maybe that person's okay, right? And so my point is that just because it naturally happens, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's right to do, okay? In fact, we have control over those kinds of feelings and emotions, right? It's just that oftentimes for young people, we don't put those emotions and we don't put those in check with clear thinking according to principles. One of those principles being is that person someone that's worthy of investing into a relationship that will very soon end in marriage? Right? Probably not. Or maybe you just have no idea. So really, if it is something that two parties are not ready for, then you should really not pursue it. I think a lot of times I just have to confront this in this generation, guys and girls alike, is that a lot of us, if I'll be honest with you, you're in love with love. You're in love with the concept of being in love, right? So there's all this. I never did this kind of stuff. This was like invented, I think, over the last couple of years because I didn't know that you could do this. I'm like almost 40, right? And 30-some years of my life, I never knew that you could do this to make a heart, right? But now people do this all the time. So this way, right? Yeah, so I really think that a lot of us were enamored and were fascinated by this idea of being in love with somebody. And I think it does become idolatry when love that we seek from another person becomes the pursuit that we're after. Or, for some of us, it's the when the opportunity arises, we jump on it. And that becomes our idol. Okay. Also, do not enter a relationship ignorant of the goal and ignorant of the persons involved. I think oftentimes people will overestimate themselves. We think that we are ready when we're actually not. I'll never say, and also this, we oftentimes not only overestimate ourselves, but we also underestimate the difficulty of the process of being in a really good relationship. We think it's just going to happen naturally. You just hang out. You just spend time with each other. You're just in love, so it just should happen, right? And oftentimes this is what people say is, Pastor, that seminar was great, but I'm going to still date this person because I know that it's not going to happen to me, right? I know that all those warnings and all those bad things that happen, that's true for everybody else, but I think we're going to be the exception. I think we're going to do this right. You know how many times people said that to me? I think I'd be a millionaire right now if all the times that people said, we're going to do this right, right? And it doesn't work out that way because we're human beings. I'll tell you this. I always tell people, I root for relationships to work out well, okay? But in area of relationships with younger people, I'm cynical because it rarely, rarely happens, okay? It rarely happens. We either overestimate ourselves or we underestimate the process. We don't think it's as hard as it really is. I use this illustration a lot, and I'm going to bring it up to you now. What changes? Imagine on a wedding day. By the way, I think the wedding day is like the easiest day of marriage. Some of us think it's like the hardest day of marriage because it's so busy, all these people, you have to dress up, so many things to do. Wedding is like, that's the easiest part of the wedding, easiest part of the marriage. I'll tell you this. I love weddings, okay? So don't take me wrong. But weddings are, getting married is easy, even for the ugliest dude here, okay? Marriage is easy, okay? Just find somebody who will like you, okay? Interested in you, and that's it. Marriage is easy. Staying married is really hard. Staying married is really hard, okay? So who cares if you're married for one day or 1 hour? That we celebrate that. We celebrate. Oh, you've been married for 1 hour. You just got married this morning. We're so happy for you, which is great, right? But I think that's great, but we have to celebrate those guys who've been married 50 years, right? And if you talk to them, they will tell you how hard it is, okay? So going back to this illustration. Most people on day one, they love each other, right? When they're up there, I've done, I don't know, half dozen weddings, okay? And I guarantee you this, for 100% of all the weddings that I do from this day forth till eternity, when two people, a man and wife, are in front of me, they're going to be in love with each other. They will, right? So when they say, you know, they write their vows, and till death do us part, I'm going to love you from rich or poor, you know, if you have one arm or two, if you lose all your teeth, if you lose all your hair, I'm still going to love you. They sincerely believe that with all their heart, 100%, right? But why is it then after a year, they hate each other? Why is it after 10 years, they don't even live, they don't even sleep in the same bed? Why is it after 20 years, they split? Is it because they were insincere in that moment? No, it's because they were sincere in that moment, but they did not realize how difficult the process of being married is. It's a lot of work. It requires a lot of maturity, which is one of my points that I'm going to talk about next week. It requires maturity. So we can't overestimate ourselves. We can't underestimate the process. We cannot be ignorant of the goal. We cannot be ignorant of the level of maturity of the persons that are involved. That's you. Also, relationships are like fire. Okay, this is how I think about it. Relationships are like fire. They can be life-giving. Right? You can, like, you're freezing cold. You start a fire. It starts warming you up. It can... You know, you can cook food on it. You can eat and nourish yourself with fire, right? Fire, if channeled correctly, can transform civilization, right? I mean, before fire, everything was sushi, right? Before fire, everything that you ate was fresh, it was hard, it was difficult to digest, okay? Nothing was cooked, okay? Before fire, no heat. I don't know what else you could say. No fire, no civilization. Once fire was fire invented? I don't know. Once fire happened and they were able to channel it, what happens? You can cook your food. You can have like barbecue and satay and all this stuff, right? Civilization happens when there's fire and it's used right. But fire, when used incorrectly, can destroy. Fire used incorrectly will burn down houses and cities. Okay? Marriage is like fire. It is powerful. It is awesome. It is scary. Scary good, right? So it's like really an excellent thing, okay? But it's also, if used incorrectly, can really be destructive, okay? When you have that oneness with somebody that's not in the context of marriage, it can really be destructive. It can really destroy lives. It can really destroy you. And like I said, pastorally, that's what I want you to know, because I don't want you to destroy your life. I want in our church, I want us to marry each other, right? I want us to like go through, I want to do all of your premarital counseling and your wedding services, and I want to see you guys have kids and get old, and then I'll laugh at you guys because I went through that and it's so difficult. But I want you guys to experience the joy of marriage. Pastorally, that's my heart. And so I want you to do it right. Here's some frequently asked questions. Okay, I thought of some questions. There's like a zillion questions that could be possible, but I'm gonna just kind of ask myself two questions, and then if you, like I said, if you have questions, please SMS that number. Okay, is it up there? It's always there, right? Down there. Okay. First question: how can we know the right kind of person to marry unless we date frequently? Right. I mean, don't we need to practice dating? And how are we gonna find that person unless we like, you know, shop around, right? I do think, okay, that when you're at like a certain age, you're older and like you're ready for marriage, I don't have any problem with people dating with the clear communication and expectation. Hey, I'm not like here to mess around. I'm thinking about, you know, I want to have a serious relationship. And so dating and going on dates with a handful of people is not bad, okay? But if it's like dating, just why can't we just date, you know? I'd say this is, for younger people, for casual dating and whatnot, I think there's a lot of better ways to get to know somebody than by dating. Because really, when you think about it, dating is kind of like an artificial way to get to know you, right? Because you're not really putting your best, you're not really putting your true self before you, someone else, right? I mean, in a first date, you're never going to fart in front of that person, right? You're never going to be like, bleh. You know, you're not going to do that, okay? You're going to make sure that you're, like, really polite, and even though you don't like using fork and knife, you just dive into the food. You're going to be like, this is so good, right? And you keep being so polite. And then, you know, you're going to talk really nice, and you're going to talk about things that shine a good light on yourself, right? If you really want to get to know somebody, okay, watch them in life group, right? Watch them in... Okay. I'm not sure what happened, but... What happens in your life group, Pastor John? You're going to know. You're going to know that their feet stink, right? You're going to know all this stuff that you wouldn't know on a date, okay? That's why I think it's really good to have healthy community and be in healthy community, because that's how you really get to know people. Okay. I think that you can get to know people much better in a non-dating context than in a dating context. And so dating is not a necessity to get to know people that you could potentially marry. Okay. I'd say one person once said that dating is actually like not practice for marriage, it's practice for divorce. because you choose. Like, you're a consumer, right? You look at this person, oh, she's okay. She kind of, like, does something weird. Her eyes are weird, or so I don't like that. So, okay, I'm not going to call her back, right? That's, what is that? That's you're being a consumer, and you're picking out things that you like or dislike, and then you choose. Marriage is the complete opposite, isn't it? Marriage is you commit. You know everything that's wrong about that person, but you commit to them. Okay. And then if you don't want to talk to them, you just say, okay, I'm not going to call that person again. That's practice for divorce. Okay. Can Christians marry non-Christians? What about just dating non-Christians? Well, let's just tackle first, can Christians marry non-Christians? I really believe that that is not possible. Okay. I mean, it's like possible. People marry non-Christians all the time. But I'd say if I were to advise somebody, if they were to say, Pastor, I'm thinking about a relationship with this person, but that person is not a believer, I'd say I would highly recommend against that. The Bible is very clear. You should not be yoked with someone unequally. Okay, and I think about it a little bit more practically. I think that passage is a little bit broader than just marriage, okay? Like, you should not be yoked unequally with in all different kinds of contexts, but marriage is definitely one context in which it applies. But I think just in general, the person that you marry, you should have, like, the same, you should not be similar in everything, right? But you should have the same core value, right? The one thing, if there's one thing about you as you follow Jesus, should be what? I love Jesus, right? And if that core thing is not the same core thing as some other person, I don't know how there can be a compatibility, right? Eventually, there's going to be a conflict. And eventually, somebody's going to have to win, someone's going to have to lose, right? And I'll be the first to say, for my parents, my dad was not a believer. My mom married my dad, not as a believer. And he became a believer much later in life. Man, there's decades of painful, pain in their marriage because of it. Okay, and I would still not recommend it. If my mom and my dad came up to me, right, future me, I don't know, said, "Should I marry?" I say, "No." Another way I look at it is, there's no hope for change in somebody unless they're a believer. So no matter how good that person is, they're only going to get worse. Does that make sense? Like, that person may treat you awesome. That person may be a nice person and a great person. But something that people often forget about relationships is over time, people change. Over time, people change, which means that in the course of a marriage relationship, if that person doesn't believe in Jesus Christ, there's no possibility of that person getting better according to God's eyes. There's no possibility for sanctification, if you want to be technical, okay? But there is possibility for someone who's a genuine believer in Jesus Christ for that person to change, to change their temper problems, or to change their lusting problems, or whatever else there may be. I'm living proof of that. I'm such a sinner, okay? And I'm so thankful that in my marriage, my wife has been patient with me, and that God has been faithfully sanctifying the sinful, stupid, embarrassing parts of me. And it's not completed, but I'm thankful that he's working on me. Otherwise, there's no hope for forgiveness, right? Let's say a husband and wife, one's not a believer, somebody hurts that other person. What source of forgiveness is there? I mean, you might just out of your kindness forgive that person, but if it's a really deep violation, there's no way that there can be forgiveness except through Jesus Christ, right? And so when you think practically at that level, it's really going to be hard for a believer and a non-believer to be paired up in the way that marriage is intended to be, okay? What about just dating non-Christians? Well, I mean, kind of goes back to the point where if dating is for the purpose of marriage, then dating non-Christians really has no point. Oftentimes when, I don't know, like back in the day, we called it missionary dating, right? Like, I want to date this person. I'm going to date this person because that person is not a believer. So I'm going to try to save that person, right? That's why I'm dating them, is so that I can share the gospel with that person. I mean, yeah, none of you guys buy that, right? Because all of us know that's like total rationalization, okay? Or maybe you're like, oh, that's me, you know, I don't know. But that's totally rationalization, right? Because we're saying, oh, the reason why I'm dating is not, you're denying that you like them, that you're emotionally attached to them, whatnot. And so it gets messy. And then this is the thing is, okay, let's say that person does become a believer. And then you break up. What happens? I mean, best case scenario, that person still follows Jesus. That's by the grace of God, really, if that happens. But what oftentimes happens, and I've seen this with some friends of mine, non-Christian friends, they dated a Christian girl, and they dated, and then he became a believer, praise the Lord, right? And then what happened? They broke up. I don't want to go to church anymore. Why should I do this? A lot of times when people are in relationships like that, their faith is so tied with that person that oftentimes it's not really a genuine faith, or if it is, it gets really mixed up with it so that if they break up, it's really hard to, like, get back on following Christ. Does that make sense? And so missionary dating is not really effective, as all of us know, okay? Let's go ahead with the second point, relationships. So first point, relationships should have the end goal of marriage. Second point, relationships must keep a healthy pace towards marriage. Now, this is where we're going to get juicy, okay? I'm going to talk about sex. So this is, like, graduate level stuff, okay? No one's going to teach you except me, so I'm going to teach you some things, okay? Relationships must keep a healthy pace towards marriage. Marriage is about oneness, okay? Like I mentioned before, marriage is about oneness of identity, intimacy, and intention. Genesis 2, verses 24 through 25. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. So this pre-fall relationship between Adam and Eve, before sin entered the world, it exemplifies this oneness between a husband and wife. That they were, a man leaves his blood family and joins with this other person that he has no relationship with. They become one together, right? He leaves his family, cleaves with this woman. They become one flesh. When you look at Adam and Eve's relationship, and the man and his wife were both naked and not ashamed, that really exemplifies the nature of a marriage relationship. That's that they were one like that, right? They weren't even embarrassed to be naked with each other. I don't want you to think about that too much, but think about it a little bit, okay? Therefore, oneness is a process that doesn't end on the wedding day. It starts on the wedding day, okay? Let me say that again. Oneness is a process that does not end on the wedding day. It starts on the wedding day. Okay, that means what happens, what about all of the relationship before the wedding day? Everything that happens before the wedding day is preparation for that oneness after you get married. Okay? Oneness, I think of three ways of oneness. Okay? Oneness is emotional oneness. That means you're tying up your feelings with each other. Your desires for one another, your opinions, you share your opinions. Do you know that when you share your opinions and you share your feelings, that's like one of the deepest levels of communication? Like surface level communication, how's the weather? What time is it? What'd you eat, right? But deeper level communication is, this is how I feel. This is why I hurt. Does that make sense? And so that's how you get emotionally tied and one with somebody. Physical, obviously, is sex. And sex within marriage is an awesome activity that is a stronger bond than blood. If you're like me growing up, I had no idea about sex. My parents never talked about sex with me. Only thing I learned in school was when I was in grade 5, and they make us watch a movie about, you know, sperm and the egg, and they join together, and there becomes a baby. But nobody ever taught me, like, what sex is about. Like, what is it really about? But sex is something that, done in the context of marriage, is really a beautiful thing. Okay, you guys are gonna just have to take my word for it. Okay, spiritual, learning how to worship Jesus together, okay, carrying each other's burdens, praying for one another, helping each other grow, being accountable to each other. That's the kind of spiritual oneness. So oneness that starts after the wedding day is emotional oneness, physical oneness, spiritual oneness. Therefore, the healthy relationship prepares a couple for marriage but doesn't cross certain lines yet. Okay, a healthy marriage starts with a solid friendship. Okay, that's the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's why in a casual dating norm, you don't really get that building up of a friendship. Because the intensity of emotions, you already start up here, right? So you're already starting, ooh, do I click with this person? Do we have some kind of spark or chemistry or some other ambiguous term to talk about, like, the emotional attraction or whatnot? Well, a lot of times it starts there, and that's why for many, many couples, what they struggle with and oftentimes what the cause of divorce is because they actually haven't become friends yet. Do you actually know that a lot of marriages, a lot of couples get divorced after 20, 30 years of marriage? Did you know that? It's after their kids go off to college and they get a job, they get jobs, and then the parents, they've spent the last 20 years focusing on their kids, and they never focused on each other. And when they start focusing on each other, they realize, I don't even like this person. Who is this person? That person's not my friend. I don't want to even hang out with them. Then what happens is, let's just get divorced. So their marriage was held together by their kids. So a healthy relationship starts with a solid friendship. I think that's why, once again, in the church context, I think it's great to build healthy friendships. In fact, that's why we have co-ed life groups. Sometimes in some seasons we have single-gender life groups, but we intentionally have co-ed life groups so that you learn how to have healthy relationships with the opposite gender. Most of us, we don't know how to do that, you know, naturally. Because usually, like, we're either, like, super shy or, you know, we're flirty or a lot of different things. We're competitive. And so really in the context of life group, you learn how to, like, have friendships and have healthy relationships, and for girls to make really good girlfriends, for guys to make really good guy friends, but for guys to learn how to treat girls well, for girls to really honor brothers. And, you know, that's the kind of dynamic that's healthy, okay? Healthy relationships. Also, I think healthy relationships go through different tests. They go through the tests of time, where it's helpful to go, do you really like that person? Like, a lot of times people hate this, okay? But I used to be known as the pastor. Don't talk to Pastor Andrew if you're interested in somebody, because what he'll always tell you is he'll tell you to wait. And the reason why is he wants you to wait because there's the test of time, right? So I always tell people, I really do. I tell people, let's just wait. So if somebody asks me, the first time they ask me, I think I'm interested in this person. For the most part, usually I'll say, why don't you wait a little bit? Why don't you pray about it and wait, right? Why? Because usually for people, after 6 months, especially guys, 6 months later, I really like this other girl. Well, what happened to this other girl that you... I'm not interested in her. I'm not in class with her anymore. I'm not in life group with her anymore. It's, you know, I wasn't on that missions project anymore with her. So they move on to the next. The test of time is, well, I'm still kind of interested in her over this period of time. And that's healthy, right? And you don't start any kind of relationship before that. You go through the test of time before any damage is done, okay? Also, there's issues. You go through different issues. You build up friendships. You know, Nikki, what's funny about my relationship with Nikki is she didn't like me at first, okay? So she really, how do I put it? I was kind of like a little bit too hardcore. Like, I was just kind of serious and, you know, I really love Jesus. And she was, you know, so when we served, I was her ministry team leader. I was the hospitality team leader, right? And she was, so actually at first she was the hospitality team leader and I was just a member, right? And then, and that's when I joined the church. And then I became the coordinator over the ministry team. So, like, I was kind of her boss, right? And I was, like, a holy terror, right? I was so legalistic. I'd be like, did you guys count? I'd always tell her, counting, you know, she's responsible for counting, right? And sometimes her and her friend would just take forever counting because they'd be giggling and like, I'd be like, how come you guys haven't counted? I can count in like 2 minutes, right? It's taking me 10 minutes to count how many people are. And so like I would rebuke her, I, you know, all these things. And she didn't like me. She didn't like me because of that. I know, it's hard to understand why that's possible, right? But I think what's helpful was I changed. And then she also changed, right? Where we began to, in the context of ministry, we kind of got to know each other better. And even though those things happened, and you know, but I changed from it, you know. And even when we got married, we had some of those fights about that kind of stuff. Also, tests of projects. What I mean by that is, I actually think that the wedding is one of the first great projects that a couple goes through to learn about marriage, because you got to work together on this wedding, right? If like the guy's like, just do whatever you want, then the girl's gonna be like, get angry, and you know, or they gotta learn how to work on it together. My first fight, serious fight with Nikki, was like 2 days before our wedding. Right? She was so mad at me. I forgot about what. She was so mad at me, and like, so we had to work through the issues. You know, we had to work through budget. We had to work through like family issues. I really think that wedding was a great project that tested our friendship. Okay. Obviously, when you're in a relationship that's really heading towards marriage, there is going to be some level of emotional oneness, right? There is some level of even physical oneness. I mean, it's not going to be sex, okay? But it holding hands, those kinds of things. I try to tell people when they're engaged and things like that, it's okay to hold hands with somebody, right? With that person that you're engaged with, right? It's okay to, you know, kiss or peck, you know, a little peck or whatever. But I'll tell you this, there's a big difference from before you're married to when you're married. There's a huge difference, even in something practical like how well you know that person, right? So before you're married, I mean, at least in a healthy relationship, there's still boundaries, right? So you don't really see that person like 24/7. But when you're married to that person, you see them all the time at all hours, you'll be like, ah, you're like, it's kind of scary sometimes, like what they're like, you know, midnight or 6 in the morning or something like that, okay? Okay, let's see, where am I? There should be an intentional pace in which the relationship moves. So marriage is about oneness, and then there should be an intentional pace in which the relationship moves. Song of Songs 8, verse 4. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, that you not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. And when you read a Song of Songs, it'll make you blush, okay? Because there's some like really like, woo, they said that in the Bible kind of stuff, okay? And but one of the things that is one of the verses in the Bible is this, where really like you don't want to stir up or awaken that desire until the right time, okay? And I'm going to explain this a little bit more. Therefore, we have to beware of counterfeit oneness that it can occur between men and women. We have to beware of counterfeit oneness that can occur between men and women. Let me identify some of these things. Ambiguous relationships. There are all sorts of ambiguous relationships that happen, right? A lot of times it's emotional attachment that happens like face to face, right? Where like, you know, I don't know, that guy knows how to play guitar. I'm not thinking about anybody specifically, knows how to play guitar, right? And then, you know, that girl knows how to play tambourine or something, right? Or the triangle, and they're like jamming together. And, you know, there's this emotional oneness that comes. A lot of times it happens from social media, right? Like you end up chatting a lot. And nowadays this happens all the time, where you're on WhatsApp and you have a kind of like a day-long conversation with the same person. Like you wouldn't have with normal people, but like for this person, for some reason, you know, you're like sharing deep thoughts on your phone with somebody else that you wouldn't necessarily share with anybody else. It happens a lot. It doesn't even have to be people that are in your proximity. It could be like somebody halfway across the world that you don't even have never even met personally. And I wouldn't be... You know, it would be naive to say that that does not happen. And I would say, in fact, it probably happens a lot with your peers and some of us here, where we've gotten emotionally attached, or we've got involved in an ambiguous relationship with somebody that we've never even met before. But because they kind of like elicit or solicit like a response, they're like, hey, how are you? You know, it can lead to a lot of things. And some things are pretty awful when you think about the ambiguous relationships that we can get into. Oftentimes, counterfeit oneness can occur through physical stuff, right? A lot of times people will ask, you know, when you're dating somebody, like, what can you do, like, physically, right? Like, can you, are you allowed to hold hands? Are you allowed to kiss? Are you allowed to hug? What are you allowed to do and what are you not allowed to do? I'm going to say it like this, okay, in a way that you'll never forget it. All acts of pre-sex, okay, are intended to end as sex, okay? So that means everything from the very beginning. That means the very beginning is stuff like holding hands, touching each other, right? To kissing, to pecking, right? To then, you know, whatever other kissing you want to do. And then hugging. What it does, what it's supposed to do, okay? Some people call it like foreplay or whatever, but I'm just going to call it pre-sex. But really, all that stuff is intended to lead to sex. Okay, let me say this again. In a normal sexual relationship, okay, when you're engaged in a normal sexual relationship, you don't just be like, okay, let's have sex, bam, then all of a sudden they just, you know, have intercourse and that's the end of the game, right? I mean, a lot of times when you watch movies, that's what sex is portrayed as. Let's have sex, okay, so then, bam, it's done. That's not what happens. The process of sex is a gradual process, okay? It's where all the pre-sex stuff happens, and that ultimately leads to intercourse, okay? Therefore, back in the U.S., is there an Indonesian way to do this? In the U.S., they call it like first base, second base, third base, and then home base, okay? That means home base is like intercourse, first base, I don't know, whatever qualification, holding hands, second base is like hugging, third base is making out, whatever it might be, okay? But I'd say this, any of those bases, or if you're running along the path, the end goal, at least what it's supposed to be, is sex. So therefore, anything that you do before is really heading into dangerous waters. Because you cannot go back. Okay? In a relationship, in a dating relationship with somebody, because you know you get involved physically, in physical oneness with somebody, there's always it always combines with emotional oneness, right? It always combines together. Even spiritual oneness. Do you know this? I've had people who are not married, and they're having sex, and they say, well, it's okay because we pray every time, before and after, right? And during. I don't know. And we're like, what in the world are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense. Okay? What was I talking about? That's why for sex, if a couple that's dating goes anywhere along that process, unfortunately, the reality is they can never. It's very difficult to step back and say, "Okay, we're not going to do that anymore." I mean, how many times does that happen? You're like, "Okay, we're not going to go cross that line again," right? But what happens? You start, you know, you're never going to go less. You're always going to go more. That's just our sinful nature. Outside of the context of marriage. In the context of marriage, that's what's supposed to happen, right? It's when you're doing all that stuff, it's supposed to lead to really good sex, okay? But out of the context of marriage, you're trying to stop. You're trying to stop like a speeding truck. It's not going to happen, okay? That's why what ends up happening is a guy and a girl who are physically involved, it always ends up. Unless there's some really good intervention along the way, it always ends up that way. The best illustration that I've ever seen of this, my wife was telling me, reminding me of this, was if you imagine you have these two hearts, right? And when you get involved emotionally, physically, you start gluing these hearts together, right? In the context of marriage, that's what's supposed to happen. In the context of just dating outside of marriage, and then you break up, what happens? If you're glued together and you try to tear two hearts apart, two paper hearts apart, there's always going to be a part of that paper on the other heart, right? And that's what will happen. If you, as you engage in oneness before marriage, you're always going to carry that part of that other person with you. You know? That's unfortunate. But I do believe this, okay? As I really believe that God can redeem our mistakes. He can. So the mistakes that we make in previous relationships, mistakes that we made for whatever reason, perhaps even some of us have been sexually assaulted, that doesn't mean like you are now have a stigma for the rest of your life. That means that Christ can forgive you. He can redeem and change those things so that you can be in a healthy marriage relationship. But that means also you got to do some heart work inside. Okay. Okay. Let's see. Where are we now? Therefore, couples need to establish boundaries. When you do start dating, couples need to establish boundaries to help pace themselves appropriately. Individuals should be under separate accountability. So that means the guy should seek out accountability with another guy. That means the girl has to seek out accountability with another girl, okay? And they should have those kinds of healthy relationships with other fellow guys or fellow girls, where they can ask them the tough questions. Hey, are you guys messing around? Are you guys keeping your boundaries? You know, what were you guys doing late at night? Those kinds of questions. And then think through your boundaries with that person that you're dating. This is where I think maturity comes in, right? And a telltale sign of someone who's not ready for a dating relationship is when you can't talk about this with the person that you're dating, right? But think it through and talk it through with the person that you're dating. And couples who are dating should not act like they are married, okay? More than just being a personal pet peeve of mine, I just think that this is everything about counterfeit oneness that you could possibly get. And this happens sometimes, right? This happens when a guy and a girl, they're dating, they might even been dating for a long time, and they act like they're married when they're not. They do everything together, they have the same social circles, they eat meals together. They're always touching each other. I'd really say that before you're married, don't act like you're married. Okay, you have to really keep those boundaries that are there. Because once you're married, even physically, like I said, I'll be really crass with you guys. Is, you know, before you're married, there's a lot of sexual tension. Okay, I don't know why that. It's like forbidden fruit. Like you always like want what you can't have, right? After you're married, my wife and I laugh about this all the time because we struggle with this like any other human being, okay? But now that we're married, we're like, what's the big deal, right? Who cares? Like now we like, it's anytime, right? It's not like we're like, there's not the tension anymore. So we laugh because we're like, why did we make such a big deal about it before, right? Perspective is everything like that. Okay. Like I said, I don't know if it embarrasses me, but it might embarrass you, and maybe my wife. Frequently asked questions, okay? Let's have two frequently asked questions, and then we'll open it up to your questions. Can men and women be close friends without being romantically involved? Okay. I'll go through the life stage of people, okay? When a boy and a girl are 1 year old, they can take a bath together and be completely naked, and it's okay, right? Nothing wrong with that. After a while, though, when they become 5 or 6, they really shouldn't be bathing together, right? I mean, you can play together. You can even have, I don't know, some parents are okay with, like, sleepovers and things like that between boys and girls. Because they're still not like sexually active, right? Sexually, maturing. Not sexually active, sexually maturing. Once you get to be like 12 or 13, right, you learn, okay, there's a guy's locker room, there's a girl's locker room, right? And it's inappropriate to see certain things with boys and girls. You can still be friends. I mean, grade school, You can still be friends. In fact, probably girls can probably beat up most of the guys around up till junior high school. You know, they're probably better at sports and all these kinds of things. And so they can be friends and hang out. High school, you can still be friends with guys and girls. But now, in around high school age, what happens? You're like, you kind of become sexual beings, right? So like that desire becomes a lot more real. And so you have to be a little bit careful, right? I mean, you can't have like guys and girls wrestling each other. You know, that's kind of weird because it's a lot of like rubbing up against each other and stuff. That's not appropriate, right? You obviously don't want to have sleepovers with guys and girls, I don't think at that point. I think some people might differ with me in opinion, like parents and things, but I'd say when you're in high school, that's probably inappropriate, right? In college, I think you can still be friends, but there's some limitations about what you share with people, right? I mean, those are some of the mistakes that I've made, is having these deep conversations with girls late at night when I shouldn't have been having those conversations. It's inappropriate, I think. I think there's some things that you can be open and share with, but I think there's some lines as you get emotional. You know, as you get older, basically the idea is you should have less and less friends of the opposite gender, right? Why? If you get married, your best friend should be your spouse. Don't you think it would be weird if your best friend, your wife, you have a wife, and then you have a best friend, like for me as a guy, I had a best friend who was a girl, and I share all my problems and struggles with my best friend, and then here's my wife? That doesn't make any sense. My wife should be that friend. I'll give you a case in point. I remember when I was in my 20-somethings, I went to a wedding, a friend's wedding, and I saw this friend of mine who was a girl, and we were really good friends in college, right, in university. And I'll be honest with you, I think there are some points I think I liked her, okay? And so it's not like even then, like, there's a pure friendship. Because, I mean, if you're human, you're always thinking, is that person somebody that I would like to marry? Or, you know, that happens all the time. But at that point, she was married, right? And so I was, like, happy to see her as a friend. But I realized, this is weird. There's something that's different, fundamentally different in our relationship. It's because I'm a man, she's a woman. We can't be friends like how we were when we were kids. In fact, to honor her, I should talk to her husband. And so I just started talking to her husband instead of her, even though I didn't even know her husband. Because it's weird, why am I trying to strike up my friendship again with this girl when she's married to this guy who should be her best guy friend? So just to honor her and honor her husband, I just talked to her husband, and it was fine, right? As people get older, the more those thoughts cross our mind. Does that person like me? And then you might even think, oh, there's no way that I would like this person. But the problem is you never know what that other person is thinking, right? And so I'd say it's really difficult for men and women to be close friends without becoming romantically involved as you get older, right? You can be friends. When she's praying and she's in the Word, she forgives me because Christ has forgiven her, and we're able to, on a practical level, we talk through it and we discuss what happened. If it's my fault, I apologize. But it really has to do with, that's why I like that spiritual maturity is so crucial. Because without it, then, it's going to be really difficult to forgive. I mean, sometimes we have a hard time loving people in our life groups. Imagine if you saw that person like 24/7, they were sleeping in the bed next to you, on the same bed. You can't escape them. How are you going to love them? And that's where the maturity has to come in. And I think on a very practical level, that's why things like communication, practical skills are very important. Knowing how to resolve conflicts and having just simple rules of engagement in conflicts are really helpful. And so oftentimes when I see in, for example, life groups, sometimes you guys like get into arguments with one another. You're like, I hate that person. I can't stand talking to that person. The person always gets me mad. I say, well, that's really good practice for learning how to resolve conflicts, because that's how you resolve the conflicts with your spouse. And that's how I resolve conflicts with my wife, is we have to talk through it. We have to forgive one another. We have to take responsibility for our sin And so that's how we resolve our conflicts. Nothing magical.
Another one is, what age differences are acceptable for a biblical marriage, and is it better for the guy to be the older one?
I don't really think there's much of a requirement about that. In the Bible, there's nothing that says, like, guy has to be older or whatever. It's more of a practical concerns about age differences. So the practical concerns are, like, if one is much older than the other, there's some generational differences, you know? Like, even for me and my wife, we're only 3 years apart. But, like, she doesn't know any 80s sitcoms, like the TV shows that I love, like the cartoons that I love to watch. She's like, what are you talking about, right? And so on that level, we don't really connect. Now imagine if that's 10, 15, 20 years apart. Like, there's going to be a lot more differences like that, right? I don't think it's impossible, but it just requires a little bit more work if there's a bigger age gap. So either way, guy or girl or guy. Then there's the practicals. Let's say a guy marries an man marries an older woman, and there are those things like childbearing and those kinds of things. Sometimes if husband or wife is very old, then it's hard to run around with younger kids, right? It's hard to have change diapers when you're 50 years old. But it's doable. It's just hard. So it's more practical. So there's no like biblical limitations about that.
There's two more right now. Is it okay to have a relationship with someone who is Catholic? Since someone who's Catholic might also believe in Jesus, is there a but to that statement? And if there is a but, then what does that mean?
There's always a but. I'd say that what I've just learned being in Indonesia is what you're classified as doesn't really mean that much, okay? So whether you say, so this is the thing is, if a guy or girl, they're talking to me and they're entering into a relationship, but, you know, they're a Christian. Like, so I know what they say. That means on their KTP, it says Christian, right? But like, if you really get to know them, that's what's important. So it doesn't matter if it says Catholic or Protestant or whatever. If they believe in Jesus, the same core is there, the core values are there, it doesn't make a difference. But that's not like the only qualifier is that there's a C-A or K-A-T-O-T-H, whatever how you spell Catholic, okay? Just because that's on their ID, it's now magically they're qualified to be to date, right? I'd say that's like a minimal requirement. Like, that's not even a requirement. That's like a technicality, at least in our context here, where it doesn't matter what's written on your card. You can believe whatever you believe. And so I think it would be more of an issue of, as I really get to know that person, what do they really believe, right? And I do know Catholics that they really believe that Jesus is God, Jesus is Savior, He's Lord. They want to live for Him. They want to love Him and serve Him. Yeah, great.
And the last one we have is, what are some wise ways that a girl can respond to a guy who is approaching her as a student?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And maybe vice versa, too. Wise ways to approach for a girl to approach if a guy's interested, right? I'd say that in that case, I think number one, I think mentorship is really important, and I'm going to touch upon this next week. But I think if that happens, I think one thing that they should that sister should really do is talk to an older sister and get some guidance about what the next step should be specifically, right? Because just a lot of times we need guidance. We all need guidance, and especially in this area of relationships when it sometimes can go past rational thinking. When it comes to like romance and things, we don't think clearly sometimes. And so having somebody who can clearly give some guidance. I'd say if that girl doesn't feel ready for entering a relationship, then I think that person should be very decisive and communicate that very clearly to the guy who approaches her. If it's a little bit more ambiguous, which happens a lot, and the guy is giving signals that perhaps he's interested in her, but he's not verbally saying, which really is cowardly, then I would say that he's still getting mentorship from an older sister, and then she doesn't have to necessarily be clearly communicating verbally, but there should be clear nonverbal signals that she is not reciprocating. So let's say that guy is constantly messaging her, you know, what did you eat? How's your class? You know, what do you want to do at night? Did you do your laundry? I don't know, whatever. Like, I think it should just be clear through nonverbal communication, not like, I'm not interested in you, no thank you. I think it should just be, don't respond. I think a lot of times, so one thing for sure is, I think a lot of times girls will be worried about being nice. So like, oh, it's not, I should at least say one thing, right? Well, I'd say, you know, you have to be decisive in your nonverbal communication. If you're not interested, or you know you're not, especially if you know you're not ready, then don't communicate back. I think that will send a pretty clear message that, okay, that person's not interested in me, I'm going to give up, right? I think it's the same thing for guys. I really think I'm going to get on guys' cases. I mentioned guys being cowardly if they're kind of like sending these signals, but they're not like really committing towards anything. I think guys like to do that, right? Girls like to do this too, but I think guys, they like to go fishing, right? They put out the nets, see what fish are biting. And literally, no joke, okay? I know guys who will do that with multiple girls. And they'll just see who responds. Just to see maybe what girl is vulnerable or open or whatever it might be. And then they'll kind of pursue it. Even if it's just with one girl, I think that for guys, don't dishonor your brothers. Sisters, don't dishonor your brothers by sending signals that aren't what you mean. And, you know, you have to be really careful about that. Sometimes we don't even know that we're doing it because it's just part of who we are or, like, our society upbringing or whatever. When a lot of times people are looking at that and they're reading into it in a totally different way than you intend, or maybe you do intend for them to read into it that way, and you're just defrauding them because you're giving messages, sending out messages about interest when you're not really interested in that person, or you're not willing to commit to that relationship, which I think is even worse for guys, because if you're not man enough to fess up to this relationship, then why are you even playing around? I think that's a big issue, especially these days with Line, WhatsApp, BBM, whatever else people use. Any other questions? Okay. Can I ask you to do this? Can you just stand together? Next week, I'm gonna have my wife come, and we're gonna share our story. I think you guys, usually people like that better than me. They're like, I'm tired of Pastor Andrew. He just preached a sermon, and I don't want to hear him keep talking. So I think it will be good to have my wife's perspective on some things, and maybe I'll have her field some questions at the end as well. Don't worry about the notes. I'm going to give you guys the notes. If you missed some things, I'll give you the notes. And next week, I'll consolidate the 4 points. And we'll finish the last 2 points. But really, my heart is pastoral for you. Like I mentioned before, I think a lot of times in our ignorance and in our recklessness about relationships, there's a lot of damage that's done. And I've been a pastor long enough where nothing surprises me. You know, someone comes up, hey, Pastor, can I have a meeting with you? This is something I need to share. I'm usually not like shocked by what I hear. And so I'm not surprised if some of you guys have been involved in relationships or are in relationships now or have done stuff that you're embarrassed about or ashamed about or feel guilty about. I know that if this church is a segment of representative of our general population and of our university, you guys struggle with those same things. But the hope that I have for you is that as you bring those to Christ, confess of your sin, you lay down the different hurts, different things that burden you, Christ can redeem those things. And he gives us a new start on all these things. And what I would love to see for you is for you to be living all out for Jesus. And all out for Jesus as you guys get married, have kids. So really live that out. So can I just ask you to spend a few moments in prayer? And I want to encourage you, if there's some things that you want to talk about, you're always welcome to set up an appointment with me. You're always welcome to please talk to your life group leaders. There's a lot of great older men and older women in our church that you can have coffee with or meet up with. Please do that. We'd love to help you. We'd love to walk through this stuff with you. And I want us just to close by bringing all these things up to the Lord and laying our hearts before Him. And let's just pray that we will love Christ more than anything else. And as we do that, seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, other things will be added as we go along. All right, let's just spend a few moments in prayer. And we'll close out with just maybe one or two songs. Let's pray.